Hello, folks. This is Princess. You are listening to the Millennial Mustard Seed Podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share with your friends.
Okay, we are back at it again. I'm so happy that you guys are here with me for another episode. I have Ron Moorhead. Listen, he's traveled the world doing research on the unexplained, undiscovered, and unexplored. He is recognized around the globe for the best Bigfoot Sasquatch audio recordings, known as the Sierra Sounds. Yeah, you heard me right. The Sierra Sounds. We have Ron Moorhead here. This recording, you guys, you got to hear it for yourself. It's about halfway through the episode, but listen, buckle your seatbelt. This is going to be a ride to remember. Let's jump right into the show, guys. I'm really excited for the show tonight. Ron, thanks for being here.
Well, I really appreciate you inviting me on. I just love to talk about it and hopefully bring some enlightenment to myself and to other people. What I have to say rings true, and I hope it does because it's true.
I want to start off by asking you, how did you start this unique journey that you've been on for quite some time?
Yeah, it started for me, Rod, in 1971 when I was invited into a remote area of the Sierra Nevada mountains. My friends were hunters at the time, and they had encountered these beings or creatures or whatever you want to call them. They're huge and around their hunting camp. And this is 8 miles into the wilderness, 8,400 feet in elevation. So you only access this in the summertime, springtime through the fall. And one of the guys got scared off so bad when he first heard these sounds that he wouldn't go back by himself. And the men were a day late coming out. And he invited me to go back with him so that the wives wouldn't worry so much. Because at that time, you didn't know what you were dealing with. I mean, they were not looking for Bigfoot. None of us were. It's a hunting camp, and that's what they were there for. So, but these things came around the camp making their huge sounds. And they've seen the huge footprints they left, but they're very elusive. They're very fast, but they have a huge voice, as you'll hear in the recording I sent you. And it's just, it can be kind of concerning because, again, you don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know if they're going to come and eat you or carry you away or just how you're going to defend yourself, even though you got high-powered guns with you. And we all carry guns all the time. But you don't know that the guns are going to be really effective as big as these things are. So that's how it started. In 1972, we had a reporter going up there really just to try to help us to resolve what was going on and what it was, because we had started reading about Bigfoot at that time during the winter. And he went up there looking, thinking it was a hoax, as so many people think or did think. And he couldn't discover the hoax because, well, first of all, it wasn't a hoax, and he couldn't figure out how anybody could be doing what they were doing. His name was Alan Berry. He ended up writing a book about that in 1978, I think it was. But he took the sounds and he actually started trying to get some science behind them, figure out if they're fake or real, one way or the other. He didn't care. He just wanted to know. And he got a Professor Curlin at the University of Wyoming to study them for a year. And he came out with quite a statement on them as far as they were real. They were not faked. They were not speeded up. They were not slowed down. They're just incredible how they compared to the human vocal tract and all that stuff. And so anyway, that was a big jump, you know, academically for Alan, because he's had a master's degree in science himself. But he knew what this might represent. None of us really had a concept of, I didn't anyway, had a concept of what it really meant. Not that we still do, but we've got a better idea now, at least I do. Alan Berry passed away a few years ago, and he became a good friend of mine after that. And anyway, I've been on this trek since that, almost 50 years now, so it's been quite an adventure. I've kind of chased around all over the world looking for what other countries have the same reports, and I find out just about every country has some type of a giant associated with it, whether it's the Yowie in Australia, where it's the Yuren in China, or the Wild Man in Nepal. I've been in Siberia, and they've all got these stories about seeing these things. It's interesting. It's been quite a journey for me. I'm 78 years old now, and it's just quite exciting, really, because I kind of just draw some lines through my little dots on my map, trying to put these things together, trying to get a picture of what these things might be. I'm a Christian. I was a Christian at the time I first encountered these things, as all of us were, a very sober camp up there. And I started looking into the Bible of what giants represent, what they are, and how they got here and stuff like that. So I kind of got into ancient texts now, Greek mythology, a little bit in the Veda, and just interesting how so many texts, ancient texts, talk about giants and how they warred with giants, how giants came down from the sky, fallen angels, they call it in Genesis, the biblical version. And it's just quite interesting to me. I get excited when I get talking about it. You give me all a roll here in a minute.
I want to get you in the zone. I want you to be firing on all cylinders here for the audience.
That's how it started for me. And I started speaking at conventions after we got some more credibility behind these. The Dr. Curlin's report was credible, but talking about that still didn't sway the scientific community that these things existed. Even the Patterson film of 1967, which is the female walking through the Bluff Creek area, that doesn't persuade science. A cryptolinguistic study from a two-time graduate of the cryptolinguistic school of foreign languages came out and interviewed Mr. Barry and myself, and he got the copies of the original sounds, and he ended up studying them, and he claimed that this is a language by the human definition of language, which is very, very important, I think, to us, because only humans, according to Philip Lieberman, Dr. Lieberman from Brown University, only humans are supposed to have the vocal tract to create spoken sapient language as we do. These things have that. Now, that tells me a couple things. Either they're part human, we know the sounds aren't fake, so there's something else going on this planet so many people aren't accepting yet. And I know when I was in South America with L.A. Missoula, we was walking the streets of Cusco, I think it was, and I mentioned how it says in Luke how Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so should also be second coming. Well, you start studying, well, what was it like in the days of Noah? Well, as it was in the days of Noah means that fallen angels were coming down and messing with the genome of God's people. And we are God's people. The human genome is God, our God's. He created us in his image. And that means we have sapient language. And these things have sapient language, but they're not like us. They're something else. So have they crossbred with us as it was in the days of Noah? Or what have they done? What's going on? These things have been here for eons, and at least I think they have. And some of them may have crossbred with the indigenous people, making them more human-like, which would also say that they had 23 pairs of chromosomes and instead of the 24 like other primates do.
This is very fascinating to me. This gets me very excited as well. There's something going on when we read Genesis 6:4. The Hebrew word there is the Benieha Elohim and the Benath Adam. So two separate creatures, you know, we're talking about the offspring of Adam, humankind, and then these angels. And when I first really started looking at that, Ron, there's question marks and excitement jumping off the page at me. I mean, a lot of pastors want to wonder how you get more men to go to the Bible study in church. I mean, men are going and watching the new James Bond movie, the new Jurassic Park movie, but you can't get them into the Bible study. And I think if we look at the Bible as a whole, from front to back, and just let it mean what it says and say what it means without us getting in the way. First, Ezekiel. I mean, you don't even get a couple paragraphs in, and these cherubim that have multiple different heads, the head of a lion, the head of a man, the head of an ox, you know, head of an eagle, and they're wrapped in wings. All of this stuff has always had me on the edge of my seat. Your travel with LA, when you guys were in Bolivia and Paracas, Peru. Now, there's elongated skulls. Can you tell me and the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, they had been found, actually. A guy named Brian Forrester hosted us down there. He lives in Paracas, Peru. And these elongated skulls, when these gravediggers dig them up, they take them to some museum, private museum, and sell them. They're actually looking for artifacts of any kind. But they know there's some interest in elongated skulls. And this one guy, Senor Juan, who had a museum there in Paracas, has several of them, and they're not like there's just one or two. There's really hundreds of these around down there, and It's just interesting. We went down there with one scientist in 2013, and we weighed the skulls. Senior Juan gave us permission to do that and to check them out. And we found out that they're not totally human. They're hybrids. And hybrids meaning they're part human, and they are. We've got that DNA now a little bit out, for, thanks to Brian Forrester. And so, however, the DNA comes out over by Turkey somewhere, Siberia, wherever it is, and how they got across over there 2,000-3,000 years ago is another story. But we studied the skulls, looked at them, weighed them, and found out that they had close to 30% more brain matter by the elongation than humans do. And a lot of people say, oh, they're cradle boarded, you know, that's what the Incas did. Well, yeah, the Incas did do that, but why did they do that? They did that just like the Egyptians did also. Several cultures do that, trying to get the same benefits that the Paracas people had, which was, we think, responsible for the megalithic structures that are all over South America, things that we cannot imagine how they did it. I personally think they did it through sound frequency, but that's because I'm into quantum physics a little bit. And I know you can move things with sound. You can change matter with sound. But anyway, they don't have but one parietal bone on the top of their head, these elongated skulls. Now, the Inca people did elongate them, like I said, on purpose, their royalty, thinking they would get the same benefits that the pre-Inca people had that created those megalithic structures and the anomalies you see all over South America. Until you see that with your own eyes, though, you're kind of, okay, it's just somebody talking, well, or somebody making a film, but you go down and see where you can't even get a credit card in between two rocks that are over 100 ton apiece, and they're put together like a jigsaw puzzle and stretch out for a quarter mile. Oh my, it turns your head because you realize this is all over down there, and it's really impressive. Again, they have a single parietal. We have two parietals, one on each side, you know, two sides to our brain. These are just a single parietal. In 2000, and also they had two little pinholes in the back of their head, which don't know what that was all about in the skull. But in 2014, I went down there with another scientist, and he corroborated the same thing that we had the year before. They're about 30% more brain matter. But the thing is, when the Incas elongated their royalty babies with cradle boarding, they didn't get more brain matter. They just got a long skull, same brain. So they didn't get the benefits of whatever the crinkled people had. So anyway, it's fun. It was fun. I had a good time down there. We stayed there quite a while. Took a man named Joe Taylor down there, and he's probably one of the best in the world at forming skulls from bone matter. And we got permission to do that from Senior Juan. And he actually gave us permission also to unravel a mummified one. Which, again, once you take it apart and see what's really there, you realize this wasn't cradle boarded, you know. It was, and another time later on, they found a female in a tomb who had been pregnant and died that way, and the fetus inside was elongated. So we know something's going on, and it's from a culture that's technologically more advanced than we are, able to do things that we don't know how they did it. You see those things with your own eyes, and it just kind of makes your head spin a little bit and say, okay, aliens have been here. Something made this happen. we flew over the Nazca lines. We went into Bolivia also. We've been all over down there looking at this stuff. And quite compelling. If anybody gets a chance to go down there, I highly recommend it. I highly recommend Brian Forrester. He's got books, too, on the area. And had a filming company want to take me down there. I said, well, it's a long trip. It takes a long time to get there. You got to fly into Lima, Peru. Then from Lima, you have to take a four-hour drive down the coastline to Paracas just to see the skulls. And Senior Juan has passed away now, too, since then. And from Lima, if you don't want to go to Paracas, you just want to go up to Cusco and get into Ollantaytambo or some of these places where megalithic structures are up in the higher country, you fly into Cusco. And the airport up there is over 12,000 feet in elevation. So it's a bit of a challenge to getting used to it. You have to acclimate yourself to the altitude before you can even walk around up there. So we spend a day just waiting for something to kick in so we can handle the light air, I should say. But it's fun and exciting.
Do you think that Sasquatch or Bigfoot has a connection with any other cryptids that are found around the world? Dogman, the Beast of Bray Road here in the States, there's a couple different creatures that have quite the reputation. But do you think there's a connection?
Well, let's back up just a little bit, Rod. Does anybody here not believe that other people and entities from the cosmos exist? UFOs, aliens? I think we all have been exposed now by our governments finally releasing some of these files they've kept under covers for so long that aliens have been here. There's more than one type, according to the astronauts I've been listening to and the people that have been studying this, the people who have encountered these beings. Have they messed with the genome of this planet, of the creatures and the species on this planet? Yes, they have, in my opinion. I think there's a lot of hybrids here. Bigfoot could be one of them. He may be a remnant from the Nephilim. There's a way he could have got through the flood, even though everything was died except Noah and his family. But you get into my book, The Quantum Bigfoot, and it gets into the way that perhaps a recessive gene could have came through Ham's wife, one of Noah's sons. And there was millions of people on Earth when that happened. However, if that didn't happen and everything was completely pure like it was supposed to be through Enoch's line of Noah, then you got the aliens, fallen ones, whatever you want to call them, could have came here again. They got free choice. You know, they can do just like we do. We have free choice to make our decisions one way or the other. If they did that once, there's nothing to keep them from doing it again. There's nothing to keep them from doing it nowadays. And I think possibly they are here. I think that could have been what we were dealing with in the Sierra Nevada Mountains was something very alien. Because I hear reports now from all these people. I've been taking interviews and interviewing people for 50 years almost. And you hear so many different reports. You can't ignore them all. You can say some of them are just, you walk into a room and they got candles lit all over the place, you know, and they're sitting there with the aluminum cap on or something. You know, there's something probably a little bit fishy about this place. So that's where you put your flag up. But again, there are too many reports saying the same thing from different people who don't know each other, and you got to give it some credence and pay attention to it. So I do, and I've kind of put it together that there are different types of these beings called Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you want to call them, the different types of them from different alien intervention. And they are hybrids. I believe all of them are. If you really want to get into it, we're made in the image of God, the very very essence of consciousness, and he gave us consciousness. So I don't have anything against evolution, even though a lot of religions will shoot me off the planet for saying that, but I don't. I think the troglodytes did evolve. That's pretty much a given by our science, and yet something's happened to a lot of them. They've been messed with. The DNA has been changed. And a lot of them have been given different attributes. I think we've been given a very special attribute by the Supreme Creator, the consciousness God. And that's what we're made the image of. That's what gives us dominance on this planet. That's why we are who we are. I think it's very important that people understand who we are as human beings made in the image of God. And we got language like no one else is supposed to have. These things do, at least the ones I encountered did. And that means there's it's not just communication. Language is more important than that. It's being able to speak. You have to have the hyoid bone connected to the tongue with the nerves into the brain system so that you can create a sapient sentence. That's a morphine stream of words, which makes a sentence, like we're talking right now. And other animals don't have that. These Bigfoot, Sasquatch have that. So what gave them that? What entity gave them that? Is it crossbreeding with them with the humans, so as the fallen angels that created the Nephilim, or is it something else? Could they just been straight aliens? I know we've seen other anomalies up there at the camp area that are unexplainable. Lights. I've seen a UFO up there once. Me and my friend did, and it's just to me, strange things are happening around these things, and I had to get into some type of science that answers those questions that we had. And as so many people have had, trackways just stopping, abruptly stopping. That's something I used to just kick people out when they said there was, they said they saw one disappear. Well, nothing disappears, can it? Yes, it can. According to quantum physics, things can disappear. Take the density away of something that weighs something that's really heavy, and you won't make a track anymore. I get into that a little bit in my book. So it's just important that people don't kick me out with the baby water here. I think, you know, there's been a lot goes into this, and you have to open your mind up and understand that quantum physics is a modern science. It's how everything actually works in, throughout the universe. Most of our studies and most of our researching that classical researchers do is classical science, Newtonian physics. And it's based on everything being physical, material, measurable, predictable. And that's just not true. I was in a group of a bunch of scientists. And I said, somebody here, if everything's measurable, tell me how far it is to the end of the universe. Nobody could do that. So I think I kicked me out of the club. I'm not sure. I'll tell you what Nikola Tesla said one time, which I really love this statement. It's the day science begins to study non-physical phenomena will make more progress in one decade than all the previous centuries of its existence. That's Nikola Tesla. The creator of quantum mechanics, Max Planck, he said, science will progress one funeral at a time. That's what he said, one funeral at a time. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that's so true, because I was listening to somebody else, Eric Van Dunk, earlier. He said, you know, until another group of scientists come in, younger ones who really want to stretch out and think a little bit, things don't change. And that's what's been changing. Is as a scientist dies and somebody fresh comes in, it makes things progress a little bit more, and more things open up to the scientific community. So a lot of brilliance out there, and these people just need to open up their minds, I think, and understand that there's more going on than meets our three-dimensional eyes. We live on a planet in a linear time zone, which basically just for us, because linear time only exists in our three-dimensional reality. We think of yesterday as being here. We think of today as we're doing right now. We hope there's a tomorrow. We're not sure, but that's what we hope for. Well, in space, time doesn't exist like that. And that's hard for people to get their head around. It's hard for people to understand what the end of space could look like, what the end of the universe could look like, because you cannot imagine it in our three-dimensional makeup that we have. We've been given the attributes that we have. Jesus Christ tried to tell us how to get back to the Father. He said, I wish that all could be one with the Father as I am one with the Father. And when you listen to some of those red letter editions, what Christ was really saying and really delve into the scriptures, it all comes together. And it all comes together pretty nicely, I think. And we live in a very unique time right now with all the stuff going on. I think it's important that people realize just who we are and the planet we're on, primo planet of this solar system. Aliens want to be here. They've been being here for a long time. But I think aliens have a problem trying to acclimate their species to this environment. So they are in, there's a hybridization program going on. And that's where you hear about these alien abductions and stuff like that. And I firmly believe that, because I've known some people pretty well that they won't go public with it, but they've been abducted. They say they have. Dr. Lear, who L.A. Missoula is quite well acquainted with down in Southern California, he's also passed away, but he performed, I think, 17 different operations from people who said they had been abducted, and he took out some implants from them that they didn't know what they were, but what are they doing? Why are they doing this? They're doing this to acclimate their species to this planet, which is the jewel of the solar system. It's beautiful here. We've got rivers, mountains, streams. Oh, my goodness. We're destroying this planet. I'm not out there hugging trees and all that stuff, but I got to tell you, what's going on this planet is not healthy. And that may be what's disturbing some of the aliens, because they don't want us to screw this planet up any worse than what we're doing, in my opinion.
The Quantum Bigfoot, your book, is phenomenal, by the way. I haven't finished it, but I definitely went through the biblical perspective in chapter 2, read through your introduction. It's very interesting to hear you speak about how we're on this linear time and that it exists for us right now. The Sierra sounds, they really creeped me out the first time I heard them. It sounds like a sapient language. Do you take this as two creatures communicating to each other?
Yes, we had a human sound expert listen to that one that you're going to play. And she said it was a male and a female having a little confrontation. And but that's only one of hours and hours of these sounds that we have. And there's all kinds of different sounds on them. We recorded these things from 71 all the way through 76. I was going up there as often as I could get away. We didn't have encounters every time I went up there, but a lot of times we did, especially 72 and 74. were just heavy years with encounters, and we were recording them a lot. So we have a lot of recordings of these things. Yeah, that one is very rapid sounding. They talk very, very fast, which also lends to the theory that their brain works faster than ours does, that it's rapid chatter.
I'm going to play the rapid fire sequence that you sent me. Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, at the very end of that recording, it sounds like a human is saying, well, that's not nice. Did I catch that in there?
Yeah. That was Warren Johnson. He was the leader of our group. We were getting a little bit bold at that time. I think that was 1972 when that specific one was recorded. He would open up the shelter door. We had a shelter built up there. And yell out at him. When he was there, he would be the one that was doing all the talking. None of the rest of us would, just to try to keep it simple as we could. And that was him yelling and talking back. Also, he had a whistle exchange that I've got recorded that's really kind of cool. These things whistle through the vocal cavity, not through their lips like we do. And I think it's also a form of communication more than just a how do you do or something. But anyway, it's quite harmonic. We had that studied, and that was established through the University of Wyoming when Dr. Curlin did his report.
Now, I've heard you speak about hearing like car doors close out in the middle of nowhere, like other strange sounds. Now, the rapid fire that we just listened to, it sounds like at some points this Sasquatch is trying to mimic a Rottweiler maybe, or a dog barking. Like it's kind of webbed into the vocals. I mean, that's kind of what I hear. Uh-huh. I really want to ask you, have you had any supernatural experiences other than the encounter with Sasquatch while out there?
Yes, absolutely. That's what got me into quantum physics, because classical science does not address those things, how they could be happening. You'd see balls of light. People call them orbs now. 2016, when I was up there, we had this little tent set up because we didn't sleep in the shelter. It was just dark. We had the tent open. It was a nice night. And this light, about 3 foot long, I call it a lifesaver, like Star Wars, comes floating by our tent. And we watched it for several seconds, maybe up to a minute. And it was just slowly moving between the trees. And nobody's there. I mean, my gosh, it's just... How do you explain that? What do you do with that? Where do you put it? It's in and like you said, I did hear a car door slam one time when it was inside the shelter. There was no cars up there. You can't get up there like that. And you can't even get a motorcycle up there. I mean, you're not allowed to anyway. It's National Forest, I should say. Anyway, yeah, a lot of strange things happen. You hear a big whirling sound like a huge, huge tuning fork above your head, and this in daytime. You start looking around, you don't see anything. You cannot find the source of that sound. So how does that happen? I mean, what's going on? It has to be something extraordinary, I don't like the word paranormal, but there you go. To me, paranormal is just something we don't understand yet. It's a matter of trying to understand it. And so these people that want to just kick this stuff out, the baby water, like I said before, just go ahead and bury yourself in the sand if you want to put your head down there and understand the way things work is through physics. And not that you have to be a physicist. You don't. I'm not a physicist, but believe me, I know enough about it to tell you that that's how everything works. It goes right on. That's when I get into my book when I talk about Rebecca's womb, you know, that she had the twins, the hairy one and the other one. And, of course, through manipulation, she got the birthrights changed. But a twin, one could be so different than the other. Well, I found out one ever 400 twins can be fathered, are fathered by two different men. And that's interesting. So if aliens are messing around with the genome, and I do 100% believe they have and they are and they did, they can do all that stuff. We have the technology nowadays to do that. Now, in the 70s, we didn't. And we didn't even consider something like this. But as my studies go on and as I research this further and further, I realize a lot of things can happen. It's just trying to understand it is all people need to do. There's a term called cognitive dissonance, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard that term. Mental conflict that occurs when beliefs or assumptions are contradicted by new information. And that's what we run into, and that's what people have. You only can work with what your brain's been taught. And unfortunately, your brain fills in the holes when you see something strange, or it says it's not real, one or the other. So think about that a little bit. We've been brainwashed by what we've been taught. I just encourage people who are listening to this now to check things out. Also understand that all governments, this is kind of off the base a little bit, but not too much because I'm going to get into the Bible here, but all governments change their narrative how they want to control people. I say that because there are some terms, and trust me, my Bible is the source, but there's been governments during those transitions in the Bible, and they might change the narrative, like the word God sounds singular in so many places, but it is plural, not just in Genesis. But it goes on, and if you research, I got into what really turned me a little bit too is I got some Hebrew translators, and I started translating some of the words in the Bible. I found out the word, you know, where it says in the New Testament, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the heavens.
Yes.
If you look for the word camel, the word camel is spelled exactly the same in the Old Testament as the word rope. So what was they, were they really translating the word camel, or did they really mean rope? Well, to me, it makes more sense a rope through the eye of a needle than a camel. And I'm just saying that because it makes you start researching more, and I encourage people to research some of this stuff and open their minds up to what was really being said there. Because translators often, I won't even say what I'm thinking, but they make mistakes and they do things. If you don't look deeper and deeper and deeper, and you don't have to, you can be saved just by trusting what Christ told us. He said, trust in me. Trust in what he says. Read the red letter edition. What was he saying? And he tells us how to get back to the oneness that we're supposed to be. God created us in our, he created us in his image. That means we're very special people. Aliens are not. They're something, but they're not what we are. We are unique, and I think we need to understand who we are made in God's image, as I said before. Trust in that. And people say, well, weren't you scared up there in the Sierras? Well, you can't help but be a little concerned, but I also knew who I was as a Christian. I knew whose image I was made in and how I'm supposed to be. Nothing's going to bother me, really.
And, amen.
I've been up there by myself and had things happen, and that's a little concerning. I want to use the word concerning instead of fearful. I had something happen in 2011. It's the last thing I wrote about in my first book, The Voices in the Wilderness, and it was one of them was out there. Wham! You hear this big knock, and that's what they do. It's not like some bear stepping on a limb. It's something huge, and it's a big pop. At the time, I thought it was a tree knock, which they do knock on trees rhythmically, but this was not rhythmically, it was just a big pop. I thought, this was the daytime after, and I'd gone inside in this little tent I set up because the mosquitoes were so bad, and I waited for a few minutes because that's what they do to get your attention. They want to see what you can do. You're going to run out there with a gun or something, try to shoot this forest apart? What are you going to do? I went out a little later and started talking to it because I was there by myself. I shouldn't have done that, but I was up there by myself. I had a guy scheduled going with me, and he backed out the last minute. So later that night, I heard some chattering going on. Didn't see a thing. I started talking to someone. I said, whatever you are, come out. I just want to know more about you. I want to understand more. I want to know no more. Nothing happened. I go back in my tent, check my little tape recorder, got all set with my brand new lithium battery in there. Everything's ready to go. 10 o'clock at night, I hear this chattering going on, and it's a Bigfoot. That's what they do. They chatter amongst themselves. And then right outside this little tent I had, there's something walking around, bipedal, just trot like a two-legged elephant walking around me out there. And I thought, oh my, I tried to turn my tape recorder on. The battery's dead. I tell you, they have a way of draining your batteries, and they've done this, of course, up there before, too. There's an energy thing going on with them. I think they require energy to do what they do, because I think they have an attribute which makes them interdimensional. And I say interdimensional because we live in three dimensions, according to quantum physics. The mathematics of quantum science says there's at least 11 dimensions existing. We live in only three. So that tells you that there's something else going on we can't see and we don't know about. People talk about these things disappearing. Well, how they do that, I think they do it through the vocal mechanism, which is very expansive. I mean, it's much, much more unique than ours. And I think they can create a frequency that might get their vibrational mass converted into energy only. Because as at our most minute existence of every human being, we are energy vibrating at a frequency. And that's the way it is. Now, if you can change that frequency, you can change matter. These things have learned somehow to manipulate frequency, and I think. And this is all my opinion based on my experience with these things. And that's what makes a little bit of what I have to say a little bit different than most researchers, because I've had so much encounters around these things. And they are existing. They're out there. What they're here for, I have my opinions on that too, but we've gone for hours like this. I've been doing, and I get excited. I'm sorry, but I do.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there.
We're in
you.
A unique time, Rod. I mean, it's just a unique time. Our economy's on the verge of collapsing. You got people out of work. You got things going on that are very unique to this time, linear time we're in. And that's pretty much falling into prophecy. So I think we ought to be paying attention again, who we are as humans. Get ourselves ready. Put your armor on. Be ready because something's going to happen there.
I definitely agree. Wow, that was a plethora of information. That's phenomenal.
I was religiously in a church, and I've been pretty much tuned into scriptures and been pretty much there. I was the administrator of a large church for a long time until all of a sudden things. You know, the church is a structure, and there's nothing wrong with that. Good people go there, good-hearted people. They love, they care. But a lot of them aren't teaching spirituality. They're just teaching religion. And we are spiritual beings at our most minute level. Well, one man calls God, another man calls quantum physics. Now, that's not me saying that. That's Nikola Tesla saying that. And that's interesting.
And Albert Einstein mentions, what is it, a spooky...
reaction at a distance, yeah.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too.
Yeah, but looking into that deeper is so important because you realize how things can change with our thoughts. Einstein said nothing can go faster than light. That's kind of pretty much been accepted. But there's something that can go faster than light, and that's our thoughts. Our energy can go faster than light because it's a thought. And you see how electrons can couple together over distances throughout eternity, really. And they will change. And anyway, you got to look into that for yourself because it's just too complicated for me to try to explain in this program. But it's really, really interesting how that can happen and how we can change things with our thoughts and our belief system. Because once you can conceive it in your heart, and by the way, your heart's the biggest energy source in your body. Your heart's in coherence with your brain. You're going to do the right thing. That's why the Spirit of God will lead you into all righteousness. Because you will do the right thing. You'll feel it. You'll know it. That's not to be ignored. Your heart's very important, but it's got to be in coherence with your brain.
That's very interesting. I know the scripture comes to mind as you were saying that, where we see Jesus is healing people. He says, according to your faith, it's done to you. You know, and faith is the substance of things hoped for, is the evidence of things unseen. When we have faith, it can move a mountain, as described here in the Holy Scriptures. when the Pharisees come to Jesus and they say, well, which one is the greatest commandments? And he says, love the Lord your God with all your mind, your heart, and your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And all the rest of the commandments fall in place. When we love our neighbors as ourselves, we are literally taking ourselves off the pedestal and loving our brothers and sisters. And that's unique because I believe love is the greatest force on the face of the earth. Just like the scriptures lead on to tell us, love overcomes all things. It's patient, it's kind, doesn't envy, doesn't boast, doesn't demand. When God says, look, meditate in my word, to be washed and made new by the scriptures, to be transformed in the renewing of our mind. You know, when we're talking about the word of God here, there's power in the name of Jesus and there's power in his word. I've had quite a number of supernatural encounters.
Well, I could say this, the core of what you just talked about and the core of what I'm into is love and caring and having compassion. That raises your vibrational frequency to elevate you and to evolve. That's what we got. That's what we're here for, is to respond to things in a positive nature. And if you gripe about things and get ticked off at people for different reasons and don't forgive and don't have compassion, you're not helping yourself. You're not helping them. You're not really doing anything for anything. In fact, you're lowering yourself. My word to people is, know who you are as a human being made in the image of God. Know that love is the key and the core to everything, and caring and compassion. And if you've got that going in your life, you're going to be a winner. And realize that we are humans and we're made with egos, but you got to learn how to tether the ego so it doesn't control you. You can't be after everything that just makes cardinal sense to you. You've got to go by your feelings of your heart, the inner side. Make sure that heart is in coherence with your brain. It's rhythmically working right. Again, you do that through just being still. Be still and know that I'm God. I've heard that before. And that's what I got to say. Because it's just important, I think, to realize how important love and compassion is to get yourself where we need to be. And that's what Christ taught.
Very well said.
As a little statement, let me make one statement. Dr. Edgar Mitchell said, he said, there are no unnatural or supernatural phenomenon, only very large gaps in our knowledge of what is natural. We should strive to fill, to close those gaps of ignorance. And really, there's people want to separate spirituality and real life and just go to church on Sunday. Well, no, you got to keep it all together. We are spiritual beings, whether you like it or not. You better make the most of it while you're here.
Ron, it's been a pleasure. I really hope I can have you back for a part two.
Well, thank you, Rod.
Big fan.
Well, let me know when, and we'll make it happen. I love it.
Ron, where can people find you?
Now, I have a website, ronmorehead.com. It's MoreHead10. Email me. I get emails every day, and I love to respond to people's questions if they want to know more or know what I think, because it's really what I think. It's not. You can't say you know. You can only say what you think you know.
Yeah.
So my books are available on Amazon.com. They're also available on my website. I suggest my website. That's ronmorehead.com again, or bigfootsounds.com.
Well, that's it. That's the show, everybody. I really hope you guys enjoyed this. If you found this episode to be helpful in any way, you learned something new, found it captivating, or just entertaining, share it with a friend. Coming to you from Southeastern Pennsylvania. God bless America. Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. All right, listen, I'll tell you what. Share this with a friend.